It's another episode of One on One with Joe O'Donnell. Thanks for tuning in. Great show for you today. But first, some sadness, some disappointment. The Minnesota Wild season is over. Yes, it's been a couple of weeks. No, I'm not happy about it, obviously. I'm a little scarred, to be honest. I haven't watched a lot of playoff hockey. I don't know about you, especially if you're a Wild fan, but if you've been watching the Stanley Cup playoffs this year after the Minnesota Wild were eliminated in Game 6 by the Dallas Stars, I applaud you. To be honest, yes, I'm very busy with family life and driving the kids to youth sporting events, helping coach my son's baseball team. But like normally, I feel like I'd be really dialed in on the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I check the scores. I check the box score. I've watched some highlights. I have watched a period or two of a few games where I've been like, hey, I got to catch some of this game tonight. And I have. But I have not like sat down and watched an entire game start to finish yet. Since the Wild were eliminated in particular. And I don't know if that's, again, because I'm just disappointed, if I'm scarred or what, but just the reality. They've been fun. Playoffs have been great. By all accounts, everybody's enjoying them. I'm just not there yet. Maybe it's a life thing. Again, maybe it's just disappointment. But either way, hope you are enjoying the Stanley Cup playoffs, whether you may be a Wild fan or not. And certainly setting up for what appears to be a great conference final. The second round outside of Florida and Toronto, essentially all really good series so far. We'll see who moves on. And looking forward to chatting with you all summer long on this podcast and, of course, other platforms as well. Appreciate everybody listening to this episode. Don't forget to like and subscribe and rate and comment and all that stuff. Spread the love for me. Really appreciate it. My guest today is the man they call Rear Admiral. That's right, R.A., one of the hosts and co-founders of the Spit and Chicklets podcast. A lot to get into with R.A. He is part of the biggest hockey podcast in the world. Pretty cool stuff. He's got a great story. So let's just jump right to it. Cut to the chase. Here's my interview with Brian McGonigal, otherwise known as R.A. from Barstool Sports and the Spit and Chicklets podcast. My guest for this episode of One on One with Joe O'Donnell is Brian McGonigal, better known as R.A., Rear Admiral, the host and co-founder of the Spit and Chicklets podcast on Barstool Sports, also a writer and content creator for Barstool, and obviously a huge hockey fan. You can find him on Twitter at RearAdBees blog, or of course on the Spit and Chicklets podcast. R.A., what's up, buddy?
Joe, what's going on, my friend? Great to be here. It's a pleasure's all mine.
Oh, I appreciate you joining me. I know you had a busy schedule. You just said you got back from Atlanta where you guys are getting ready for another big Chicklets interview. I don't want to spoil that, but I guess I could get myself in some trouble here. I don't know the full story, but where did the nickname and the Twitter handle, Rear Admiral, come from?
Well, the nickname precedes the Twitter handle by quite a few years. It was I guess I'll euphemistically say that it was a college nickname. I don't know, maybe people can use their imagination or whatever. I don't know how much of a family show this is, but what's ironic, it was only about a 12 or 15 guys. If you went to college, anybody, it's a breeding ground for the goofiest nicknames you can imagine. And sometimes the stories don't do the nickname justice, but I had, you know, a nickname, maybe, you know, like a dozen, 15 guys called me. It was very low key. So when Barstool came out as a site, and I used to like make fun of commenters on the internet, you know, this was 2005, 2006, yeah. Oh, those people are goofballs, blah, blah, blah. But then when Barstool went from, well, added the blog to the newspaper component, and it was all Boston. It was very Boston-based, a lot of Bruins talk. So I said, oh, screw it. I'll get one of these commenter things. And I said, I'll use, you know, Rear Admiral. That's a nickname only a few of the boys know me by. So when I post, they'll know it's me. And I'm sort of like a joke proxy, I guess, for the boys who went on the site. Well, lo and behold, you know, Dave needed a Bruins blogger at a certain point. I threw my hat in the ring and typical Portnoy fashion, I didn't hear back from him. And he just posted the blog and he used my commenter name. And I just kept it. I just debated to change it at one point, thinking it would be, you know, more professional to use Brian McGonigal as jobs were drying up. You know, it was tough to get a writing gig, but I just kept it. And a few of my friends like, nope, it just works. And then, of course, the podcast came later. And now I get corporate emails referring to me as a debauched college nickname, and I get a chuckle out of it every time.
Who actually calls you by your real name?
Let's see. There's my mother and my wife, and that's about it.
How often?
Like my dad, even like when he sends me birthday cards now, he even writes RA on it. I don't know if my parents know the origin. I don't know if they want to know, but you know, it's like I said, I don't want to be crude. It's, but if you'd use your imagination with my history, you could probably figure out what it's not really naval related.
How often do you get yelled at in public?
Yelled
like
at
you're walking you, around walking around the mall and somebody's like RA, or you know, you're out at a restaurant, somebody recognizes you and they just yell RA.
It's a component I've, you know, I would say I had to get used to it. I guess there's, you know, I mean, I'm a ham and egg. There was probably always a part of me as a little kid who, you know, grew up wanting to be famous, quote unquote. I don't call myself the F word there, but yeah, it's nice. I mean, people, it means they appreciate what you do. They like you. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to meet people I look up to and appreciate their art and their work, and to tell them, you know, how much you like them. It makes them feel special. So when people do it to me, you feel special that people go out of their way that A, listen to my big mouth. I still can't believe I get paid for people to listen to me. And then B, yeah, holy shit, you listen to me, man. It's flattering.
Yeah. So for those listening, I originally bumped into RA and the Spittin' Chiclets crew at the Winter Classic in Minneapolis at Target Field. So last January of 2022, because you guys came to Tria Rink to do some interviews with the Wild players prior to the Wild and the Blues on New Year's Day. So this had to be around like December 30th or something. And I was leaving Tria Rink and I saw Ryan Whitney, AKA the Whit Dog. And I yelled at him like, "Hey, Whit Dog," you know, just like I said, do people yell at you? He was kind enough to, you know, chat it up for a couple of minutes with me. And then the rest of the crew, yourself and Paul Bissonnette and Merles was there. They all, you know, you guys came strolling through because you were about to head out to your next endeavor. And we kind of connected from there. So I guess, you know, you guys, I'm sure, get noticed in public a lot. And it's got to be pretty cool considering where this whole thing started.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's you know, whether I'm, you know, in Charlestown or over South Boston, what's crazy to me is when it happens down in New York City, because, you know, that the Manhattan is famously like, you know, they look the other way or don't care. But when I'm in other places, that's when it really catches me off guard. Because, you know, I'm from here. I'm around, you know, I know a lot of people here. And, you know, it's nice to have the people from your hometown be proud of you and stuff. But when I'm in other places, that's when it really catches me. But in Canada, though, I could probably go on a multi-state killing spree in the States. And I think Canada would hide me until I passed away at 82 years old or something, because they adore us up there. Every time we go to Canada, wherever it is, it's the love is overwhelming and they're so good to us up there.
All right, let's jump into the Stanley Cup playoffs for a minute. What has sort of stood out to you about the first round and a half or so of this year's Stanley Cup playoffs?
How much we all forgot how good the Florida Panthers were. This was a team that won the President's Trophy last year. I would say upgraded from Huberdeau to Tkachuk. They did lose Uyghur, but that more or less opened the door for Montour to show how good he was. Then, you know, Bobrovsky's been one of these hot and cold guys his whole career, and people forgot he can get hot at the right time. And I don't know, Florida, they sort of come out of nowhere, but at the same time, they've been there the whole time. So Florida, yeah, they kicked my team's ass and they're kicking Tampa's ass. I'm sorry, Toronto's ass right now. And I think they're one of the stories. And then the West, Seattle. I mean, I don't think anybody saw this coming. Grubauer has been playing lights out. He looked like he was back on the Avalanche a couple of years ago. You know, they haven't gotten to the conference finals yet, but even if they get knocked out by Dallas this round, they showed they're a really good team and they'll be a contender for quite a while.
What's the season ending storyline for the Leafs pending they don't rally from 3-0 down and come back to beat the Panthers?
Three words: blow it up. They got to, I mean, I can't imagine they would bring back Keith and or Dubas whether they get swept or even somehow forced the seventh game. It's not working right now with what they've done. The roster, the way it's built, constructed, we're not seeing these guys being hungry out there like you'd expect. A few guys are, but look at who's scoring these goals, like Kampf and Lafferty. And these guys are the ones playing hard for the playoffs and not the guys at the top you're kind of expecting. So if they do lose this round, I would imagine that they're going to make some wholesale changes in the front office and probably with the roster too. I mean, you know, you're paying a lot of those forwards a lot of money. I still not sure why they went after Tavares. I know he's talented, but to give him $10 million instead of maybe bringing in a top tier defenseman or, you know, spending the money elsewhere, I would say strengthen the bottom part of the forward core. But I don't think the good days are ahead for the Leafs for sure.
You mentioned the Panthers beating your beloved Bruins. Do you have a sense like what the heck happened there with the Bruins up 3-1, couple of chances obviously to close it out, including 2 on home ice? Now you've had some time to unpack it a little bit. Have your thoughts changed? I did listen to one of your recent Chiclets episodes where you guys kind of broke down the opening round. I know you were obviously very disappointed in what went down, but now that you've had a little bit more time to sit back and look at it, what happened?
I think they had been in cruise control too long, and you know, they weren't in playoff mode. Of course the playoffs hadn't started, but they really did for Florida a while back. You know, they had to be in playoff mentality to get that last playoff spot. that's one component. But the other one was Jim Montgomery. I mean, he did a great job in the regular season. I think the team probably made it easy for him, but his decision making, between the lineup tinkering, the line tinkering, the goalie situation, which you come to find out, Allmark was pretty hurt. And I don't understand why, when you get two goalies that you tell everybody, oh, we got two number ones here. If one guy's hurt, which Kevin Weeks described as a debilitating and painful injury, I don't know why you have this guy starting six games in a row when he started no more than four all season. So the coaching, the team not being prepared to play, and we got to give full marks to Florida. That team came, and you know they wanted it more. I know the kids say that they got that dog in them. I know that dog in them, I guess, is the phrase they all use. Well, the Panthers had that dog in them, even though they're cats all series, and the Bruins did not have that dog in them all series. So full marks to Florida too for getting it done.
You think this is it for Patrice Bergeron? Think he'll hang him up?
I don't know. I don't even know if he knows right now. If I had a gun to head, I would say probably, because I don't know. They did so good this year. I was so disappointed, which, you know, of course, that sounds like he'd come back. But he's played 19 years. He's broken a lot of things. He's been hurt. He's been dinged up. He's got young kids. And, yeah, dollars to donuts, if I had to make a wager, I'd say this was his last season, particularly based on the way he embraced all the guys after game seven on the ice and the emotion that was being showed by guys. I'd be surprised if he did come back. But love to have him. But another team was probably some dark days ahead. Could be the Bruins as well.
I want to shift gears here for a moment, chat a little bit about the Barstool family and Spit and Chicklets. You know, back in 2007, right, you joined Barstool. I'm assuming it's way different now than it was then. What was Barstool Sports like back in 2007?
Well, the Wild West compared to now. I mean, I guess that would go for the whole internet. You know, like I said, it started off as a four-page paper, a newspaper in 2003, which goes to show, like Dave Portnoy's thinking, newspapers were dying at a daily pace that back then. You couldn't get a job, let alone an internship anywhere. And this guy comes out with a four-page gambling newspaper, converts it to a blog or adds the blog later. And, yeah, you could say anything. There's a lot of blogs. Somehow a lot of them got lost, so I can't look them up. And sometimes I think of some of the stuff I wrote, it might not be the worst thing, because people tend there's an inability. I noticed that. I don't want to sound like an old grump here, but people aren't able to compartmentalize when things happen anymore. So like they judge what happened 20 years ago by modern day standards, you know, whether movies, TV, pop culture. So it was, a lot, it was Barstool Sports, the early iteration. It was raw and, rough and candid and, not the usual words we get called. I know people, racist, sexist, misogynist, blah, blah, blah. It's always just been about pushing the envelope, Joe, having fun. I've always kind of thought of Barstool as sort of a modern day National Lampoon, the old magazine back in the day, just a Mad Magazine, just having fun and trying to make people laugh. If you don't like us, fine. If you like us, great. The internet's a big place, you can move on, but a much different place. But at the same time, I think the spirit is the same of just like letting people utilize and use their creativity to just try to entertain people and make them laugh. And I started off as a writer there, hoping to get a paid gig, and they just didn't come, but it worked out in the long run.
You mentioned Dave Portnoy a couple of times now. He's obviously the brainchild, the founder of Barstool Sports. How would you describe him?
If you've seen him on the internet at all, exactly as he is. Dave's he's funny. He can be somewhat of a dick sometimes, but that's why he is where he is. He's a good guy, man. I know he has, people have their quibbles with him and whatever they can. That's free country. But Dave's a brilliant entrepreneur. He sticks to his guns. And what I appreciate the most about him is his bluntness. And he doesn't blow smoke up your ass. And I appreciate that, because I'm the same type of guy. Sometimes you don't want to hear things or don't want to read things from him. But he gives it to you straight. And I think that's all you can ask for when you're dealing with adults.
The origin of Spit and Chicklets. I read that it really started on Twitter, but, an exchange between you and Ryan Whitney. Is that 100% true? I saw the screen grab, so I guess it's got to be. But Ryan Whitney tweets he wants to start a hockey podcast. You kind of replied to it, and the rest is history.
Basically, just a little background. I mean, me and Whit, we knew each other casually. Obviously, he's local boy, made well, fifth overall pick, and I had been writing, Bruins / NHL stuff for a few years, and he was probably one of the first Barstool professional athletes that became a fan of the site and got in touch from friendly with Dave. So I, he knew, I kind of knew my shit as far as the NHL. So when he finally finished after Russia, then Sweden, he came home. It was December of 2015, and he sent the tweet. He actually tagged Biz in it. He says, "I want to start one of these podcast things to talk about A, B, C, and D. What do you say, Biz?" And Biz replied, "I'm still playing, man. I got a couple more years left." So I replied, sort of half joking, half shooting my shot, "A partner, eh?" And what he was in my DMs a minute later. He's like, "Are you serious, RA?" I says, "As a heart attack." And he says, "Do you know how to podcast?" I said, "I'll learn."
Yeah.
I got that because I know he wasn't going to go out and get the microphone and the mixer and all that stuff. Witt's not the most techie guy. So I went out, got all the stuff. And by the time the Super Bowl came in February, before the Super Bowl, we had our first episode out. It was very raw, very different than it is today, but it was the same essence. Like me and Witt, like, you know, we knew each other again casually. We didn't like hang out a ton or whatever, but we had instant chemistry, two masshole guys who like to talk a lot. And then, you know, even then it was just SoundCloud. We were like a couple of rappers or like I say, Wayne and Garth sitting on the couch doing a show. And we did a half a dozen or so. And then Portnoy says, "Hey, I listened to the show. I thought it was great. We want to add you guys to the roster." Then, you know, we get in with Barstool. Then the advertising starts coming, the money starts coming. And then we weren't looking to add a third host, but we had Biz on a couple times and said, "Geez, this guy's something else. We should see if he wants to join." And there was no plan B. It wasn't like, "Oh, Biz says no, let's go to this guy." It was just, "Let's just ask Biz." And he was elated to be asked, joined us, and he had a much longer vision than me and Witt did. Me and Witt, you know, Witt's obviously made his contract. He's got his dough. I was working week to week at the time, and it was a nice little side gig for me. But Biz came and realized this could be so much bigger. And, you know, I make the analogy, and I hope it doesn't sound arrogant, that like me and Witt sort of, I would say, won a title. You know, we were number one together. And then when Biz came along, he made us a dynasty. Like he just kind of entrenched us at the number one spot. And I think we've been there for a while now. So it's such a unique, interesting story, Joel, because if I wasn't on Twitter when Witt sent that tweet, I don't know where I'd be right now. I was a school custodian at the time. I might have climbed to the top of him and jumped off a roof by now if I didn't have that tweet pop out. So it was very organic the way it all unfurled. And, you know, I realized, you know, I didn't have a grand plan to keep writing to show this NHL that, you know, you're talking about. But that's how it had panned out. I was working towards something that didn't even exist when I started writing it and with the Bruins blog. But so when I tagged Whitney back, he knew, you know, he jumped right in and asked me to do it with him. So I was like, okay, I got credibility with this guy. So it wasn't a grand plan, certainly by any stretch, but it's all worked out so far.
The first couple episodes you recorded from your house. Did I read that correctly as well?
Oh, first several. Yeah. Well, back when I was living in Salty with my wife, South Boston. Yeah. Literally like would sit on the couch. And this was even before Grinnelli. I would record it on GarageBand, send the file to one of our interns who would do whatever they do with it and then upload it to SoundCloud. And then that was it. Like it was just doing that. And then one episode, the mixer had shit the bed during the, one of our episodes. We were rolling too. We were killing each other with laughter, and I went to hit pause or stop, and the thing had died, you know, because we didn't have somebody on site watching it. And, you know, I was very new to this stuff. I said, "Hey, you know what? I got an email from this kid from Burlington," because I would get frequent emails, but nobody was close enough. Everyone, you know, was out of state or whatever. We needed someone in the room with us. And lo and behold, the mix had died. The next day, Grinnelli's email came. The next day, the mix had died. It goes, "Hey, this kid emailed me last night." So Grinnelli, kind of like me, the right place, right time. And he come in and started, you know, making us sound a lot better than we did from the jump.
That's amazing, right? Like the way it just kind of the timing, and you look back at it now and you probably have to pinch yourself a little bit thinking about how it's all transpired. Now the sponsorships, the merchandise, you know, essentially your own liquor line with the Pink Whitney. And I know it's, you know, Ryan Whitney's name, but like you guys are the genesis of so much today in the hockey pop culture world. Gotta be pretty amazing when you look back at it.
Yeah. I do pitch myself quite often. And, you know, everyone, I guess, has an ego to some extent, but I try not to have any sort of ego about it. I'm proud. I'm very proud of it. I mean, you know, I look over at my flag on the wall, the Chicklets logo, and, you know, I see it everywhere now, and it's a tremendous sense of pride. But yeah, it's like I do pause every once in a while and say, I can't believe this. You know, like this week, and I know you don't want to spoil the interview. It's already out there. We interviewed Charles Barkley in Atlanta. And, you know, there's a guy I watched play hoops, you know, 30 years ago against my Celtics. And to the idea that I would be interviewing him someday, or even when we were in London, Ontario last week, and then watching the London Knights, that they win the game, wearing the coach's room with Dale Hunter having a beer afterwards. Now, back in the 80s, the guy used to beat my Bruins up all the time. If he would have told me I'd be drinking beers in Ontario with them in 30 years, I would have laughed in your face. So just little moments like that. I'm old enough to cherish them, where if this happened 20 years ago, I'd probably be a lot dumber about it.
Do you think the sort of, you said like the lack of the ego, the sort of humble approach that you have is because of those beginnings and because of where you were at the time this thing started.
I think, from that standpoint,
like, you know, does that keep you more grounded, do you think?
I think it's just my upbringing in the neighborhood I'm from and my parents, like, you know, and, you know, my friends always keep me in check too. Like, it's, you know, I never want
yeah, buddies are good for that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And please, if you, you want people to call you out, you never want to be loaded with yes men. I mean, you know, some friends are going to be more of your cheerleaders than others, and other friends are going to give it to you when you need it. But I think just that's who I've always been. I've kind of come from a blue collar background, and, you know, my dad, my mom, they, you know, they raised me well. And it just, yeah, I don't think, I just try to stay the same person I've always been. And I like to think I've done that since the Chiclets has kind of taken off here.
Take our listeners through how Spittin' Chiclets comes about each week, or if you're taping bi-weekly in the summer or whatever, from lining up a guest to recording. I know sometimes you have remote locations, but just that whole process and what that's like as you prepare for each show.
Yeah, we got a group text thread that, you know, me, Biz, Witten, and Grinnelli, would, you know, it kind of goes all day, almost like walkie-talkies, I guess, just keeping in touch. And if, you know, we need guests, like we haven't really done it much lately because with all the playoffs going on, that people, you know, I would rather hear about the playoff talk. But yeah, we'll throw a name out. If, you know, I get an interview, or Biz does, or Wit does, you know, we'll throw it out. Yeah, let's do the guy, everybody available this time. We'll just sort of schedule when the interview is going to happen, and then the show. And I, you know, I write pretty much most of the outline, or all of the outline for the show. I just keep tabs on all the stories that go on, try to find some interesting nuggets or you know, stats or points to bring up on the show. And it just kind of, you know, I build the show as the week comes along. You know, I'll send out the outline to the boys. And then if it's a weekly show during the regular season, we typically do it Monday afternoon, Monday nights, and drop it Tuesdays. But yeah, it's sort of a day by day process of just following hockey, which is, you know, like I said, I pinch myself. I get to do that for a living and get paid for it. So it's just keeping touch on things and, you know, keeping the boys involved with everything. But it's a pretty routine thing. I think we got a good little formula here. It's been working for us.
What's it like working with Biz and Wit, and specifically how they can go off the rails at any point in a good way, in a comedic way a lot of times, and you got to kind of manage that, and sometimes, you know, as the host, get things back on track? Or just, you know, I read somewhere you talked about how there's nothing scripted, right? It's so off the cuff that you got to be able to sort of be on the fly a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah. This, you know, and like the outline, it's not a script. It's just, you know, this is what we're going to talk about. You know, there'll be some stats in there. We'll repeat or whatever, but it's never like pre-rehearsed or anything like that. Yeah. They go on there, right? And I mean, Wit is so talented as a talker, as a storyteller. No matter where he is, he's just got this sort of eloquence that I certainly lack. And Biz, you just let them roll. I mean, in once in a while, like I'll get a like text from Grinnelli, like if we're doing it remote, which typically we're all in four different places when we tape, unless we're all together, like in Atlanta the other night. And Grinnelli will say, "Get this back on track." And, you know, I'll pull the reins in. And then, of course, people, you know, I already come in and ruin the conversation once again, which I just laugh because, you know, I don't need to defend myself to strangers on the internet. But, you know, people don't know what goes on behind the scenes, whether it's the producer telling me or me knowing this has to, you know, end right now, or if they edit it together. But, yeah, they're funny enough where you just let them go on their rants. And I know if I try to cut Biz off, then he'll stop and be like, what are you saying? Like, and then you throw him off the story. So you just kind of let Biz ride to the end. And Wit's Wit. He's a funny bastard. And I typically don't have to tell him to shut up.
Initially, or even currently, did you guys catch flack from the National Hockey League because of your bluntness and approach?
I've never heard anything. I mean, I know there've been some issues with products and merchandise and, you know, copyright materials, but I like to think that the NHL skates their lane, we skate our lane. We're aware of each other, we help each other, but we don't have, you know, a lot of commiseration, I guess you'd say. Like, you know, we're a huge, you know, PR value for the league, and I think they know that, and, you know, vice versa, we don't have jobs at all the NHL. So yeah, I certainly don't really talk to anybody in the office. I don't really believe Grinnelli does too often as far as that content, but I think, you know, it's kind of like, don't ask, don't tell, to bring up an old phrase. They just, you know, unless we're really saying something offensive or rude, somebody may reach out. But no, they kind of, well, not let us do our thing. I mean, it's a free country. We can say what we want, but we just do our thing and they do their thing. And, you know, we haven't really gotten any certain major complaints or even minor complaints that I'm aware of.
It's hundreds of episodes in now, so this might be a tough one for you, but mm-hmm. Are there a few favorite interview guests? Like, I remember listening to the Gretzky episode, I don't know, maybe almost a year ago now. I know you were, you guys had to be pumped to get the great one, but are there a few interview guests that stand out over time?
Yeah, absolutely. A name that I don't think 99% of our listeners knew when we brought him in, Tim Stapleton. We interviewed him in Chicago a couple of years back. He, you know, he had a few cups of coffee in the NHL, a smaller guy, probably had skill to play in the NHL and maybe just not gotten enough of a chance. He played all over the world. And he's somewhat of a quiet kid, but we, you know, we had a few cans of loudmouth soup, you might want to call it, in the hotel room. And this kid, it was like being in a room with Chris Rock for 2 hours. He just, the storytelling, the stories he told, I was like, this kid is so damn funny. So he immediately comes to mind. But then on a personal level, you know, Cam Neely was my favorite player growing up, to be able to get him to come in, and he hates the media. He doesn't like to do it. And fortunately, children of old, of retired players seem to be our biggest recruiters. So I guess Neely's kid was a fan, and hey, dad, why don't you go on? So he was open to it. And as an old Bruins guy, that was a huge thrill for me. And geez, there's so many ones that, like, again, not all-star guys or Hall of Fame guys, just sort of, you know, a guy like Lyle Oderlein, tremendous story he had when he came on and told about, you know, getting pricked by a cactus and almost dying and all the health woes. And a guy like Sean Hill, even Minnesota guy, another guy probably most of our listeners were unaware of. He comes in and burns the building down with comedy and laughter. So those are a few that jumped to mind, and I'm sure there's probably 15 more I'm forgetting as I say those names.
How hard is it to get some of the good stories out of guys because they don't obviously want to throw people under the bus or share stuff that they probably shouldn't? And it's probably more specifically some of the game's current players and coaches. I'm sure it's hard to get things out of them, but as you've grown as an interviewer and a podcast host, has that become easier for you? What's that like?
I think it honestly depends on who we're talking to. Now, if we're talking to retired guys who don't work for the league or any teams and have no desire to, those are typically the best guys because they don't give a shit because they're not worried about stepping on toes. And, you know, we don't want inappropriate stories like, you know, like quote unquote locker room stories. You know, I know Biz kind of made his bones with those early on, but, you know, guys don't really tell those stories anyways. It's not like you want to make your brand on that. As for the young guys, you just hope they have a good personality. And like, sometimes it is tough to get it out. And, you know, we have them on and they're not as electric as maybe you hope. Like I would say Jake DeBrusque, it was probably the best young guy interview we've had. We did him a couple of years back and he just let it fly. Like just, that's just his personality. And he stuff he was saying, and he wasn't throwing anybody in the bus. He just was telling funny stories that we weren't expecting to get out of such a young guy. But yeah, they come on and it's, I guess every interview is a bit of a dice roll. You know, some guys come on and they're just, you know, not the best storytellers, or you have 35 questions lined up, which should be enough for a 40-minute interview with four guys asking or three guys asking questions. And then you get a yes, no, no, yes, no. 10 minutes in, you're like shit in your pants because you're almost done with all your questions. So I would say, long story short, it really depends on who you're talking to. And sometimes you don't know until you know.
You guys have taken the show on the road, so to speak, a lot lately. How cool is that to be amongst the fans? Any stories or locations that stand out to you there?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, I've always sort of wanted a job where I could travel. It just, you know, go anywhere. And I'm a type, like, I wouldn't go there. I don't want to go there. I'll go anywhere, any city, anywhere, North America or wherever, just to travel on the company dime is great. I would just maybe go back to Canada and the reception we get there. I was just up London, Ontario. It wasn't actually a full checklist trip. Me and Grinnelli went up there for a fundraiser, and it's just the love and we get up Canada, whether it's London, whether I'm in Newfoundland or British Columbia. It's overwhelming how nice the Canadians are. But I would say just the generosity of people wherever we go, whether it's, you know, buy you a beer or come to our restaurant. Hey, I want to get you, you know, a hamburger or whatever. If you prefer to smoke certain things, if they might have those for you too. But just, I would say the overall generosity, there's not one that like pops out in my head right now, but I'm sure after the show, I'll think of 20 of them.
What's your wife make of all this?
Well, you know, she's not going to complain. I tell her, honey, hockey pays the bills. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm sure she probably gets, this time of year in particular, gets, you know, maybe a little sick of seeing hockey on the TV because it's what I do. But she's actually taken quite a bit of an interest this season, oddly enough, and been watching more games with me and asking questions like more than she usually does. But yeah, she knows, you know, I'm doing what I love to do. And, you know, get compensated well for it. So yeah, she doesn't mind at all. Just once in a while, she likes to get her Bravo fixed before I get the games on.
Yeah, I know you're a big movie and TV guy. What show are you binging right now?
You know, it's funny. I kind of like the weekly thing. I know people binge when they come on like Netflix. I like the shows that do like every other week, like Ted Lasso. I was huge on that season one. You know, they're in the third season now. Obviously, you know, like any show, it I would say the quality dip, but you know, it's not as good as the first one. But there's a show on HBO. It's called The Other Two. I stumbled upon it a few months back. I should say my wife did. The first season was on Comedy Central. It got canceled. HBO Max picked it up, and it's about these two sort of like late 20s slackers, and their younger brother becomes sort of like a Justin Bieber like pop star, and they get involved in like managing him. And I'll tell you, OD, it's some of the funniest like cultural satire I've seen since the early days of The Simpsons. And I don't say that lightly, because The Simpsons early on was some of the best TV ever. It just kind of pokes fun always at society, technology, just the way we are these days. It's called The Other Two on HBO. It's the only, like, I guess, a major star on it is Molly Shannon from the old SNL days. But hilarious show. That's one that really cracks me up these days.
At what point did you realize the podcast had taken off, the Spit Chicklets podcast?
I guess, you know, probably when Dave picked us up, added us to the roster at Boston, and then the money starts coming in. I mean, you hate to sound like that, not greedy, but, you know, like, holy crap, that's when I first dawned, like, okay, I can do this for money, not even for a living, just a nice little side hustle. And then I guess just it's been a slow ride to where we are, but I'm trying to think of one particular thing. Yeah, it may have been, you know, having Cam Neely come in that room that day. That was one of those like pinch yourself moments. I mean, we had done a bunch of interviews before that, but I, you know what, I'll go back further. I would say when I want to say Jack Eichel or Tori Krug. I think it was Krug was the first guest. It's when he came in my house when I had a NHL player on my couch in my living room doing an interview. That was probably the like holy shit moment. And I'm pretty sure it was Tori Krug. It's been a few years. Forgive me.
Yeah, all good. How many games do you see in person a year?
Not as many in the regular season. Just, you know, I only live 10 minutes from the Garden, but sometimes, especially I'm not a spring chicken anymore, I'll just sit here and watch it on TV. But I do try to get to several playoff games. I probably go to maybe half dozen games during the most. And now it's funny. Well, and another perk or situations, you know, becoming friends with a couple. Well, I was friends with a guy who's become a coach since then, Derek Lalonde. And Derek, Detroit, I've known him forever, but he introduced me to Coop a few years back, John Cooper. And, you know, like a couple of years ago, they were in town, Tampa, and I ended up, you know, meeting up those guys for the coaching staff at dinner and going to the game the next day. So that's kind of a new element, getting having coaches hook me up with tickets for games. So always got to take advantage of those freebies, you know.
I worked with Newsy a few years in Iowa when he was here before he went on to join Coop's staff there in Tampa. So sometime offline, we need to share some of those stories.
Yeah, well, he was a quiet kid when I first met him. It was crazy as hell. And you talk about ironic. This kid's first job, graduate assistant, he had already graduated college. I was on the Belushi plan up by college. I was working on the hockey office, work study, and that's where I met Newsy at first. And, you know, he was a quiet kid, real nice guy. He didn't come out to the bars often because all the players were there. And, you know, you don't want to be commiserating with the players and stuff. And then, you know, I graduated and saw him maybe once visiting as an alumni, maybe the late 90s. And then didn't, you know how it is at college. You might not see someone for 15, 20 years. Then a mutual gets in touch with us and says, hey, do you know that Lalonde is the assistant in Tampa? He's like, are you kidding me? Because the school he was coaching, Division III, you know, Mass State colleges, they were folding in a few years. They weren't a good team. The idea that all these years later, I hadn't talked to him, and now he's an assistant on an NHL team. And then, you know, Chicklets had taken off in the meantime. So when Tampa won the first bubble cup, I happened to be in St. Petersburg during some of the cup parties. So he reached out. He's like, hey, you're down here. You're not even bothering me. I said, I don't know, Newsy. When I go to cup parties, I like to sneak in. But if I know the people, I feel like an asshole trying to bug them and sneak in. So he invited me over at this bar, Four Green Fields in Tampa. They were, I think it was the last night they were open at that location. And it was a private party. And yeah, he introduced me to Coop that night. And me and Coop really hit it off. Like, we, I guess, bromance is the right word, but I probably text with him as much as I do with my old school friends these days, which is kind of funny.
I want to spend a quick minute just getting your thoughts on the sports gambling realm and all of this, and how these mm-hmm. sports leagues in the last couple of years have not only, you know, taken on this monstrosity that is legal sports gambling, but embracing it from the telecast, talking about the money line and who's going to win the series and first goal scores and all those sorts of things. And the fact that the NHL obviously has embraced it as well. And as a guy that, you know, as you mentioned, the beginning of Barstool Sports was essentially a gambling pamphlet or newspaper, to see the transition now and all these states that are making it legal, what do you make of all of that?
Well, first off, is the hypocrisy that's all been exposed, because they all put, you know, kind of beat this drum for years that all right. Gambling's bad. They took a moral stance on something they had no right to do for people who were selling booze left and right, you know, hand over fist. First off, that, you know, it's like, okay, so you guys pretended this was bad for years. Now you just can't get enough of it. And, you know, I mean, like, look at Las Vegas, perfect example. You know, oh, we can't put a team there, as if like the mob was going to, you know, fix games in guys' locker rooms. And now there's going to be a baseball team. We're going to have three pro sports teams in Vegas soon, if not a fourth, if the NBA gets out there. So yeah, the hypocrisy is enough to snicker at, but it's just that, you know, it's just the new landscape. You know, it's a way that states are going to make money for taxes. And I know there's obviously an addict component to it with some people. And, you know, my take is it's another vice like alcohol or cigarettes or marijuana or whatever you fancy. And you know, you got to do things in moderation. And, I'm not saying it's great, good, bad, and different. I just, you know, I like the options as a gambler myself, but I think there's a lot of phony elements to it, because you have suddenly people talking about it who never did before, and they really don't know what they're talking about. So I think savvy gamblers can see right through that. But yeah, I was going to sit here and say, oh, it's great for this one or that one. Obviously, I work for a gambling company. It's good for us that we're able to have, you know, a lot of online apps in different locations, whether it's Canada or different states. But just a new adventure, I guess, when it comes to gambling. But yeah, my first thing, like I said, it's just like laughing at the hypocrisy of all these leagues and cities and whatnot. And now everybody's got their face in the trough like a big pig.
All right, before I let you go, a little thing, quick hits, just kind of first thing that comes to mind. I'm going to throw a couple your way. You ready?
Fire away.
All the streaming platforms out there, which one's your favorite?
HBO Max.
You're a Star Wars fan. Best Star Wars spinoff is what?
A movie or TV show?
Either one.
Rogue One.
The best hockey movie is what?
I can't believe you're asking me that, Joe, but Slapshot.
I guess I should have. I know. That was going to be your answer. Could you make an argument for any other hockey movie?
Miracle. I know the rest of the world probably doesn't care here in America. Yeah, I think you can make a case for Miracle. I'm certainly not dissing it by any stretch. I mean, Kurt Russell honestly should have got an Oscar nomination for his performance in it. But I think Slapshot has a timeless element, and it's more in tune with hockey itself, the culture, the, you know, sometimes lunacy of it. And I'll tell you, that script, even back then, it was sharp as hell as far as teams moving and just all these sort of elements of the financial aspects that came to, you know, fruition in the NHL later. And interestingly, it was written by a woman, Nancy Dowd, whose brother played Ogie Oglethorpe in the movie, Ned Dowd.
Did not know that. Very cool nugget there. You mentioned the Stanley Cup parties a second ago, so I'm going to add this one sort of on the fly. What's your tip for someone that wants to act like a VIP, sneak into somewhere maybe, because there's, you know, been some talk that maybe you were at some locker room celebrations you shouldn't have been at in the past?
Act like you own the place. Just act like you own the place. And if you do, then they think you do. And then they just don't bother you.
Who will win the Conn Smythe this year?
Matthew Tkachuk.
Wow. I like it. The next NHL city, either relocation or expansion, should be where?
Houston.
The Arrows, baby. I spent five seasons there. People in Houston will like that. I've had some people tell me, and I will agree with this, having, you know, like I said, called games for the Arrows from 2008 till the franchise moved to Des Moines. They've got to keep the name the Arrows.
I 100% agree with that. And basically, I believe Houston's the largest American city population and area-wise that does not have an NHL team. And
yep.
I mean, we've seen that if you got a team, the locals are going to support it no matter what. The Coyotes, that's been sort of an anomaly due to the arena stuff. But if they put a team in Houston, it would succeed wildly and have a natural rivalry with Dallas as well.
Tend to agree with all that, and I'll take it one step further. The uniform, RA, they've got to go with the Gordie Howe Arrows with the blue and the Arrow script going down the chest. That's my take there.
I can't even think of the other one, because that's the only one that comes to my head is the Gordie Howe one.
All right, lastly, Connor Bedard. We know he's going to end up a Chicago Blackhawk, the consensus number one pick in this upcoming draft. Blackhawks just won the draft lottery. How many points will Connor Bedard finish with next season?
72.
All right. Pretty
I'll say,
pretty
dark. I'll say 32 goals and 40 assists.
Wow. So you expect him to be the real deal?
I mean, I know, you know, we're watching the junior highlights or whatever, but just what this kid does, I mean, it's almost like we've never seen it. Even what we're seeing with McDavid, I mean, this kid's doing things like, I don't know that we've seen McDavid do in the NHL. I know that probably sounds like a high number, but, and I think people get too hung up on the size thing too. I mean, you know, like go back to, I mean, Andre Rashad and Yvon Cornway, I always butcher his last name. They were little guys, man. And they won Stanley Cups back in the early mid 70s, late 70s. And, you know, you guys, Marchand and Theo Fleury, there's just so many undersized guys who proved it over the years that I don't know why they still get hung up on that. And, you know, sometimes smaller guys can get pushed around the playoffs, but, you know, other times they win MVPs and win your Stanley Cup. So I think this kid's going to jump right in and be fine.
No, look at the year Clayton Keller had this year in Arizona. He's a small guy, but almost or point a game, whatever he was this year. Yeah, I think, and it's a young man's league, right? I mean, we're seeing so many kids come in, have an impact at 20, 21 years old, even younger than that. So I'm expecting him to have good success. Don't like the fact he drew into the Central Division. He's going to be a thorn in the wild side for the next decade, but it'll be fun to watch him.
Yeah, I would have rather seen him, you know, Anaheim or even Columbus, just, you know, one of these cities to give them somebody like that. I mean, poor Anaheim, they lost out on Crosby. They finished number two. Then they finished number two for Bedard. So, you know, I would have liked to see him go out there. You know, they got some great prospects already. I know Chicago's got a ton of money to spend, and I'm sure guys will probably be lining up to play with this kid. But, yeah, I wasn't too happy to see him go to Chicago, but I'm still bitter over 2013, so that's on me.
I really appreciate your time. I know we jumped all over the map here. Thanks for sticking with me. And thanks for doing this. Keep it up. Great work. Tell our listeners real quick, if they've been living under a rock, all the various spots that the Barstool Sports web and Spit and Chicklets web has grown to, anything you want to plug, time is yours.
Okay. Yeah. My Twitter, like you said, at I'll pronounce my R's for once, at Rear Ad Bees blog. I'm on Instagram at Rear Ad Chicklets. We're at Spit and Chicklets on Twitter and in Instagram, I believe. And yeah, if you haven't listened to us yet, give us a whirl. We try to have a little fun, bring a little levity to hockey. It's, you know, we don't have an age restriction on there, but I would say we're probably 16 plus if you wanted to label it that. But if you know, we're not responsible for kids listening to podcasts. That's on the parents. So yeah, check us out if you haven't. If you have, it's great having you for the ride. Now we're going to be here for a while, and we love you and I appreciate you.
I love how, as a Bostonian, you can try harder to pronounce those R's. That was well done.
Well, I sound worse when I do pronounce them, Joe. It's just not.
Yeah, it doesn't sound natural. Yeah, I was gonna say, having worked with John Torchetti for a couple of years, when he was in the minor league circuit in both Houston and Iowa, Torchy is an East Coaster, a Boston guy through and through, and his accent would always, you know. It's just there with you guys. I get it. I mean, I'm from outside of Philly. I get still some people asking me where the heck I come from. And
need to fetch a cup of water. What is it?
Water. Yeah. W-O-O-D-E-R for the
exactly.
record.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. One last one, Joe. Shorzy, a TV show on Hulu. It's a tremendous show about hockey. You can binge it in 2 hours. It's six half-hour episodes. The guy from Letterkenny, Jared Kiso, wrote, directed, show ran it, everything. If you haven't seen it and you're a fan of hockey, or even not, you just want to laugh, check out Shorzy on Hulu. I'm in a couple of episodes, the first one, the last one, just a couple of quick shots. But even if I wasn't in it, I'd recommend it because it's hilarious, particularly if you're into the game of hockey.
I did watch Shorzy. It was great. And I did like cameos and actor as well, writer, content creator. And of course, the co-host or one of the hosts and co-founder of Spit and Chicklets, a great hockey podcast, largest in the world, folks, on the Barstool Sports Network, Rear Admiral. And R.A., really appreciate you joining me, buddy. Thanks again for doing this.
My pleasure, Joe. Anytime. I really appreciate being asked.
All right. And that does it for this episode. Thanks, as always, for listening to One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell.